the use of fire ants?
I didn't write. It was a story we didn't publish because it was one of the fights I had with the editors. I mean, he may have been right.
But the assassinations you're talking about in our last 15 seconds, and then we're going to do part two.
Well, I mean, when you have the special operations forces operating all over Africa, if you think they're telling the truth about what happened anywhere in Mali or elsewhere, it may be 70 different. We're all over Africa. Nobody controls what they're doing. I mean, it's a big problem. And this president, of course, doesn't know and doesn't care. But, you know, but there are people there. There are people behind him who do care. But it's going to be a long process.
We're talking to Seymour Hersh, and we're going to continue with a web exclusive at democracynow.org. The Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who's written for The New York Times, The New Yorker, exposed the My Lai massacre. His memoir is just out. It's simply called Reporter. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Noam Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Trina Nadura, Nat Needham, Libby Rainey, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Paul Huckabee, our engineers. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present the live broadcast for the 26th annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music, Arts, and Food Festival. This three-day celebration kicks off Friday, June 22nd, with the Good in the Hood Parade and Festival continuing Saturday, June 23rd, and ending Sunday evening, June 24th. Good in the Hood is back at King School Park at Northeast Grand Avenue. Tune into KBOO starting Saturday afternoon on June 23rd for the live broadcast. More information about Good in the Hood can be found on the KBOO.fm website on the home page.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. Listen.
Sensation, I came by my generation. My generation, my generation.
John Cale.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, that was Patti Smith, My Generation. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland. If you heard a gap in that song, I should have previewed that. She started right off with some words you can't say on the air. I totally didn't expect that from Patti Smith. I don't know why. Anyway, we're going to be talking about generations and activism of on behalf of older folks. We've got in the studio this morning a coordinator of the Gray Panthers in Portland, Lou Church. Good morning, Lou.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Well, you and I talked briefly before we started today. One of the issues, obviously, the Gray Panthers has advocated for a long time for older folks. But Gray Panthers also uses an intergenerational model and intersectional. So the whole issue of generations, in particular with Patti Smith, is useful to use a frame of what kinds of organizing are the most effective to change things locally or globally.
And I was going to say that we had a couple other guests. We're still hopefully waiting on Sally Fronsman Cecil, a longtime social justice activist and a Nestle boycott organizer from the past, who recently moved back to Oregon from Kansas. I believe she's on her way here from Sandy, maybe.
Correct.
And so that traffic can be kind of brutal. So she could be caught up in traffic. If you're listening, you know, don't make any risky maneuvers to get here on time, but we hope you will show up. And Dorothy Holland, a 70-year-old Vietnam veteran who has experienced homelessness and is fighting for the rights of the tenants in her building against a corporate landlord. She is in a wheelchair, so obviously has those issues, but we do hope that one or both will join us before the end of the hour. So the Great Panthers were founded in 1970. Do you know much about the history of the Great Panthers?
Well, some of the listeners of KBOO may have been organizing at that time and possibly remember in Oregon when Ron Wyden, who has matriculated to becoming a longtime career politician now, good on some issues, but obviously not so good on Palestine, among others. Ron Wyden started out visibly in Portland in the 70s as a Grey Panthers organizer, and he was maybe 25. So this goes to this theme, Paul and I talked briefly again, about can you be a Grey Panthers organizer and be 25? Are there issues that affect people based on belonging to marginalized communities? In terms of the history of Grey Panthers, there's a founding document. I didn't bring it with me. It's 10 pages long, and I wasn't going to read that this morning. But when Maggie Kuhn started the Grey Panthers, she felt that she wanted a radical, militant, grassroots advocacy organization, not to do direct service, but to advocate for social justice, specifically, of course, on what Paul's mentioned, older people, but also using the models in this document of the anti-Vietnam War movement and the civil rights movement, people who were visibly, actively, militantly fighting for social justice.
Well, obviously, the name, you know, the Grey Panthers, must hearken to another famous Panther group.
Well, correct. And I don't know if, Paul, if you've read Soul and Ice, Eldridge Cleaver's.
A long, 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 long time ago.
And Paul's mentioned a couple times to me, I've been able to talk to him off and on for a couple weeks now, about the Black Panther movie, which is, of course, the current commercial version of that name. I haven't seen it myself. It sounded like Paul had seen it. Was there some political content in there somewhere? It's like the most popular.
No, it was just, I was just making a joke about whether there'll be a Grey Panther movie. But anyway, so the name obviously harks, was, there's a lot of resonance from the Black Panther's name, obviously, at the time. So they took it as a kind of a catchy a way of, because probably people wouldn't necessarily associate older people. She was, I believe, she was in her mid-60s at the time, I believe, and I read that this is Maggie Kuhn we're talking about.
K-U-H-N is her last name, if you want to look her up.
Who organized the first Black Panther group, I mean, Grey Panther group. And she, apparently, I read that she was kind of forced out of her job at age 65, and she thought that she had quite a few working years left in her. So that was kind of one of the issues, forced mandatory retirement. But
which was also when longevity was considerably shorter demographically. Now, thanks to medicine and prescription drugs, among other things, people live quite a bit longer, and especially in developed countries.
Mm-hmm. So you said Ron Wyden and others were involved in the. So what are some of the other issues early? So the early Grey Panthers kind of became known for. I mean, did they had a like a visible kind of street presence? Did they mainly lobbying? What was the sort of things that they were
in Portland? And yeah. I've been in Portland, kind of like Paul, apparently, from what I've gathered. I've been in and out of Portland over time. But one of the people that I worked with, who is a Grey Panther organizer in Portland, was named Bobby Gary, B-O-B-B-Y, and her last name's Gary, G-A-R-Y. She's passed on now. But she was someone who was active, kind of like Maggie Kuhn, in social justice organizing. She ran a thing called the Life Center on MLK, L-I-F-E, an anti-poverty agency. Bobby Gary, I knew her and met her because before she was doing Grey Panther stuff in Portland, she was on the board of directors of the food bank. At that point, it was called Interagency Food Bank. And that food bank has gone back and forth in terms of names, Oregon Food Share, Interagency Food Bank, back and forth. But Bobby was someone who, she was African-American, she's a woman. She was pretty visible in some areas in Portland. As far as I know, she never ran for political office. But she was seemed to be someone, and she wasn't a friend of mine, but she was someone that I knew and worked with. And she seemed to be someone who empathized with the marginalized communities. Maggie Kuhn, in particular, felt that on issues of Social Security, Medicare, food stamps, the safety net, basically, that older people, as well as other people who are poor, tended to get shafted by the bureaucracy. And there's a great film, which I'm not sure that Paul's seen. It won Best Film last year at Cannes. We were talking about the United Kingdom before we went on the air. The director of the film is Ken Loach, L-O-A-C-H. The film is called I, Daniel Blake, and I've been recommending it to people who come to Grey Panther meetings as a great film about older people. It's fictional, but it's a story of a 60-year-old man who gets bounced around. Apparently, in the documentary portion of the DVD, it created a huge controversy and stir against the Tory government that currently is in power, because it's a recent film. This character gets Daniel Blake the runaround. He's told by his doctor on issues of healthcare that he's had a heart attack and he should not go back to work until he's better. On the other hand, there's disability in UK, which you can apply for, and they tell him that they disregard what the doctor says and that he should be working, and here's all the ways that he documents whether he's working or not. And he's someone who suffers from the digital divide as an older UK worker. He's a carpenter, so he's a blue-collar worker. He's good at carpentry. He volunteers a lot in the community. He works with intergenerational and intersectional people, a single mom in his town. But eventually, I shouldn't give away the end of the film, but it did win Best Film at Cannes. It's an excellent film, like almost all Ken Loach movies are. He's a communist UK director, about showing working class people and everyday struggles.
So I'm speaking with I guess we do have one of our guests has showed up at the studio, so we'll be joining us briefly. I'm speaking with Lou Church of the Portland Grey Panthers. So we talked a little bit about the history, both nationally and in Portland. So this group you formed just last summer?
Correct. The current structure of Grey Panthers, it's a group, and I'm not sure how analogous this may be to other national groups, but the Grey Panthers were pretty active and pretty visible in the 70s and 80s. But nationally, apparently, it fairly faded away. Sally and I have done some research about how it existed in Portland. Apparently, maybe 10 years ago, there were a couple of people who tried incorporating or did incorporate Grey Panthers in Portland. And the documents we found showed that they stopped filing paperwork. So off and on between Bobby Gary, Ron Wyden, it's been sporadic. However, there's a new national coordinator named Randy Block, who's in Michigan. And he's a great fundraiser. I've spoken to him once by phone. Mostly we do email. But there's now about 20 chapters in different states. Still kind of small. 2 years ago, evidently in Washington, D.C., the Grey Panthers made a decision to no longer have an actual physical office or paid staff. So at this point...
Just 2 years ago. So
from what I've read, yes, and what Randy's been telling me.
So there had been, the whole time, there had been...
A lull.
But there had been still the sort of, at least a skeletal,
sure,
like, national presence.
Off and on, yes.
Off and on, okay.
Yeah, yeah. What were you going to say?
Had there been, like, local chapters here and there over the time, or
the one that I've read about that's the most interesting, and this was more towards the beginning. We sent packets to, and we'll send packets again of stuff we're working on in Portland. One of the things that's really helpful and interesting for organizing of any stripe on the left is knowing what's going on in other cities and other states, or even more important, other countries. What we found out when we sent out a packet initially, when we started last year, was there's a prison in Pennsylvania that Maggie Kuhn, the founder of Grey Panthers, went to go visit in person. So that was one of the first local chapters that began. And we sent a packet to them, and the people who've been in jail there, and it's a federal prison, and I can't remember the name of it exactly, I think it's Gathersburg, possibly, but I didn't bring the documents with me. But they wrote back and said, well, here's the issues that we're working on. Their primary issue is about the criminal justice system, which has intersectionality elements in terms of disproportionate discrimination against prisoners of color as opposed to other people involved in society, they specifically object to people being thrown away. And if Sally's the person that's coming in, Sally may want to talk about this too, that elders and older people, along with other marginalized groups, tend to be throwaway people. There's even a book called that, The Throwaway Children, talking about that a while back as well. So for the prisoners at this prison in Pennsylvania who have a current and have had an ongoing Grey Panthers chapter, their issue is they're getting really old. They've been in jail 25 or 30 years. They committed their crimes. They're aware that...
and done their time.
Well, that the current occupant of our White House, Donald Trump, recently commuted the sentence of someone who had been in jail because one of his apprentice guests lobbied to let this woman out. She was a great grandma. So she's an example of someone who's older, who did their time for a nonviolent drug offense. Most of the people in jail, apparently, in the United States are in based on drug offenses. So one person got out, which is good. But the prisoners in this jail, federal jail in Pennsylvania, say they want, across the board, people getting out of jail rather than being just stuck there with three strikes, you're out forever. As older people.
That seems like a big one. So we do have our guest, Sally Fronsman Cecil. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to KBOO. And so you had a little commute in this morning. Yeah. How was the traffic?
Not great. Yeah. And I haven't come in that route from Sandy, or during rush hour.
Yeah, I was thinking of that as we're waiting for you. I was like, it's not the best time to come in. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you tell us about your history in activism and organizing?
Oh boy, I have a ton of history in organizing. I've done peace and justice organizing since about 1968 uh-huh. or something. I'm 70, so you can kind of see I've got a long, long history of various and sundry kinds of things. I was also a VISTA volunteer 5 times.
Wow.
So I've done a lot of sort of semi-reimbursed or something volunteer rhythm, you know, like $500 a month and you're working full-time doing community organizing or projects, something like that.
Well, give us a highlight or two of your time.
Well, I guess I'll just be general. I've worked with food banks a couple of times, uh-huh. you know, doing food distribution, getting food together for stuff. And that's actually something Lou and I have in common. He worked in food banking too. And I think probably what's more interesting to people for current is that I am now functionally homeless. I am 70. I have had an interesting career arc. My late husband was a college professor, but I've always worked in things like human services or done these VISTA positions or things like that. So I never had a well-paying career that provided a pension, those kinds of things. So I am now in the situation where I actually still own a house that is falling apart in Topeka, Kansas, and reached crisis, I don't know, what implosion or whatever, and I'm now living in a household provided by my family. Hmm. They're taking care of another elder relative. He pays rent. I am unable to pay anything, but they were able to sort of install me in there, and I do a little bit maybe to help take care of him. But I am functionally homeless. I am in that situation that I'm not on the street, thank God, right? And I'm very fortunate, and I know how fortunate I am that I have family that could take me in. But I'm a step away, and there's absolutely no way I can pay for housing myself. I'm in a situation right now where I had debt from the move. So whatever I'm paying on debt still would not be enough to have housing here, even if I were just on Social Security. Right now, I've got to do both.
So that must be obviously an issue that you all are working on, housing and homelessness. Obviously, with the current situation, there's so many people who are living out in the open in various ways, but it's definitely hardest for me anyway to see. I'm taking care of my 89-year-old mother mm-hmm. at home, so I'm obviously faced with aging issues on a daily basis. But to see someone of almost her age out on the streets is mm-hmm. it's truly heartbreaking, and certainly doesn't do your health any good.
And statistically, there will be more. I did a little preparation, read some things about homelessness in Portland, because after all, I'm relatively new here. It is a lot different here than it was in Topeka, though there's plenty of homelessness in Topeka. And I've noticed that in terms of elder population, it's going to increase 45%.
And that's on the basis of what?
On the next 10 years, I believe that the basis that that particular article was using was like 50 and over. They were considering seniors, which I call elders, way.
What do you think the reason is for that? Is it
baby boom? I mean, I'm the leading edge of the baby
right,
boom.
Right, so you're basically people who don't, you know, whose work situation or for whatever reason don't have the Social Security benefits or the pension benefits mm-hmm. that would allow them in the current economy to...
Yes, right. and that's a growing... we're the leading edge of that.
And also, I should probably add, I'm glad Sally was able to come. I was hoping Dorothy was coming too, but we'll see. On housing in particular, in Portland, in L.A., in San Francisco, San Antonio, Utah, Hawaii, maybe a national problem with housing, but there's the homeless issue. There's also tenant rights in housing, which is once you're, Sally may want to address this as well, but there's some people who just feel like HUD housing. People may have noticed housing and urban development has been in the news the last 2 months, and this is a project that we are working on. Ben Carson, who's the HUD secretary under Trump, announced a couple months ago that there was going to be, at that point, he said, according to the Oregonian, not a reliable source, a 300% rent hike for low-income tenants who are in HUD housing. There's a very detailed article I found last week that looked into the specifics of that proposal. It appears that now Carson and Trump want only a 200% rent hike. Basically, this is from the alt-right philosophy that people who pay more are more invested in being likely to work. But the demographics of women with children, disabled people, elders, as Sally says, may be able to work part-time, but then their job options tend to be McDonald's or not what they're trained for in terms of education. In Portland in particular, I don't know if Paul, or I'm sure at KBOO, some of the hosts have talked to Israel Baer, who recently resigned after 15 years at Street Roots, being the coordinator there. But Israel and Homer Williams, who's a homeless advocate, but also a real estate developer who's been against and now for advocacy for homeless people, Homer and Israel, in particular, have said more than once that their biggest concern about homeless people is people who have worked all their lives, and this is not to discount young people or families or women with children, but older people who have worked all their lives, maybe at jobs that weren't at Donald Trump's salary or something a little better in general, and then find themselves, because of the exorbitant rent hikes, being priced out of housing. There's even a film which listeners may have seen called Priced Out. It was just featured on NPR nationally, Portland, Oregon, a couple days ago. But being priced out of housing means that unless there's some specific remedies now, like legalizing rent control in Oregon, or figuring out a way to build housing a lot faster, and we know that Metro has proposed a large housing tax proposal that should be on the ballot in November. Elders in particular are subject to crime when they're homeless, women in particular who are elders, and there are a variety of problems that, based on the panorama, the universe of Trump attacks against people in the United States and other countries, elder advocacy may be seen as not first priority or third priority, fifth priority. Our belief in terms of trying to do intergenerational and intersectional organizing is that there are lots of issues where we want to protect people and protect people's lives and ability to live reasonably. And those issues can affect people at whatever age.
So
I just wanted to add that with seniors being a particularly vulnerable population, I have also done a lot of work with disabilities, mental health disabilities, physical disabilities. I belong to a couple of coalitions where I was there. I was working with a lot of professionals, but as a self-advocate, as a parent of somebody with issues and things. And so I'm well aware that one of the other problem people face, people on disability, seniors, is that we have so many other demands on our money. Now, I personally don't have to have a personal care assistant, but many people do. That is not free. People are under the impression that these kinds of programs provide pre-help, but actually people have to pay a client share on those things, even where you have state programs home and community-based services. People have varying degrees of doctor's visits they have to have, medications that they have to have. So quite often, housing can come lower in your priorities than those things do. I cannot, for instance, take the money that I pay as supplemental to my Medicare and use that for housing instead. Sometimes people do, and they end up homeless. Sometimes people just plain don't take the things they're supposed to take. They can't afford them. Or you do hear in the media of people who have to make the choice between food and their medications. This is not uncommon. So there's this sort of panoply of things that go across there, of health care, housing, food, sort of all what I consider the, you know, basic kinds of things. Food, shelter, clothing probably doesn't even get in the budget. Clothing's one of the few things, however, that you can get free.
I should probably mention, Paul may be doing this here any second, but if people do want to call in, it is a call-in program. It's 503-231-8187.
Hey, that's my job.
Join the conversation. Well, in the past, I've guest hosted for Cecil once or twice or more than that. So we want to encourage people to call into KBOO, of course. And if you wanted to find out more information about the Portland Grey Panthers in particular, we had a debate about Facebook, and we are on Facebook. People might want to look for Portland Grey Panthers 2018. Sally and I have both been posting to that. People are welcome to put ideas or suggestions for organizing well. And for email and phone contact, I'll just mention it, 503-222-2974. And the email address, which is fine to use, a little complicated, it's letters and numbers. It's P-O-B, like post office box, P-O-B-400-11. At Juno.com, J-U-N-O. People tell me nobody uses Juno, but that's what that address is for now. And again, the call, it's 503 if you want to call the station today and talk. 503-231-8187. I interrupted Paul. Go ahead.
So we would encourage people to call in. So obviously you're a group that has members. You're just a year old in this latest incarnation of a Portland Grey Panthers, and as you said, people probably KBOO listeners are tendentially more aware, being probably tendentially somewhat older and somewhat more politically aware than some other radio demographics might be, and but they may not know that there is a Portland Grey Panthers group actively working. So how often do you meet? Where do you meet? Why do you think people might want to get involved in your group?
Well, in terms of being an organizing project, we turned in 50 signatures from people on a petition to National Grey Panthers. Randy, who's the coordinator in Michigan, asked for us to send in $100. We did that. That makes us a network. In terms of local meetings, Saturdays at 4 p.m. at Portland State, there are meetings. They're held at Chit Chat Cafe, which almost sounds like a Texas left-wing progressive name for a place, but we've met there off and on for a while. So Saturdays at 4 p.m.
Where is that at PSU?
It's not in one of the PSU buildings. It's the address is 1907 Southwest 6th. It's on Green Max. People know it mostly by being next door and sharing a bathroom with Hot Lips Pizza at Portland State. It's a block from Neuberger Hall. So if you go from Broadway and walk towards Idaho, one block, Chit Chat Cafe is right on the corner. There's a bunch of glass, floor-to-ceiling glass windows on two sides. It's easy to find.
So again, so you're working on as I wrote on the program page at KBOO.FM, Wednesday Talk Radio, you're organizing on housing, healthcare, public transit, gun control, and rent control. So talk about some of the things you've done over the past year.
Well, I should probably mention, and I'm sure Sally has several comments in regard to those five issues. I wrote a grant which was funded generously by Mackenzie River Gathering for a conference that some of us did a while back for gun control. And I could mention, I'm always curious when doing KBOO, how KBOO listeners think about what we call corporate media and their coverage of social justice issues. This, of course, could include things like gun control or senior advocacy, elder advocacy. The Tribune, the Portland Tribune, which gets published a couple times a week, and I believe is published by a timber baron. We've been looking at it at Portland State back and forth with the Oregonian, but it seems like on some issues, like Measure 97 last year, the Tribune was for healthcare, and the Oregonian said no to M97. Yesterday's paper, I should mention, had an article that I wrote, and this one talks about parkland and advocacy for vulnerable people. In this case, high school students are getting shot in their classrooms due to the lack of gun control. It advocates for passage of Measure 43, which is set to be on the ballot in November, chief sponsors being religious leaders in Portland, Mark Knudsen at Augustana Lutheran, and Reverend Alcina Boozer being two of them. Well, I'm sure Sally has some thoughts on healthcare, housing,
other kinds of
Social
things.
Security.
Yeah. I mean, it may seem odd to people that we're talking about gun control and these things, that there's a reason, you know, of course, the focus now is on going to be on youth because of that movement. However, I mean, there is certainly an overlap with, say, Black Lives Matter and people's concerns. In fact, I feel like in some ways that's gotten kind of swept a little bit under the rug in terms of what media coverage has covered, partly because people are less concerned about people shooting Black people, I guess, than shooting high school students and white middle class America, I would make a bet. Now, I'm a long-term radical, so what do I know, right? But you might think it's odd that Gray Panthers would be interested in that, but that has to do with what I consider intersectionality, is that, you know, that there are concerns that elders are going to work on. It might be different than different cities for Gray Panthers, but there are things outside of your own specific interests that are going to overlap with other people. Some things are going to be specific, like housing, which is a problem for varying groups for varying reasons. Food is going to be an issue there. Nobody's going to like to see their grandchildren or other people's grandchildren not have enough food. But of course, you're going to have to put some emphasis on your own, what is it, my daughter said, sort of your own specific needs. The things that you are running up against yourself. For instance, I'm 70 and I'm looking for work. You know, he mentioned the problems of people who are elders, etc., finding work. Ageism is alive and well in America. You know, my daughter's comment was, as I'm going to my various health providers, getting established here, having moved from Kansas, I'm getting established, is that, and I didn't notice this myself because I'm busy trying to do my health stuff, but she said, you know, your providers are all looking shocked that you have to work, that you are going, that you intend to work. And I'm thinking, well, what do they expect? I don't have enough to live on Social Security. People have the idea that Social Security makes you secure, but it doesn't. Clearly, I'm not housing secure. Many people are not medication secure. Quite a few people are not food secure.
Yeah, and it's certainly not getting any better in the current situation. People are encouraged to call in at 503-231-8187 to join this conversation, especially if you are an older person. But as they're talking about, it is an intergenerational series of issues. So coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Making Contact examines the criminalization of Black girls, their intricate lives being highly judged by teachers, administrators, and the justice system. At 10, as always, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. Followed by Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, the food show reports on the threats posed by Big Dairy in Oregon. And as always, we thank all of you KBOO members out there for your generous support. And of course, we encourage those of you who have not yet become members to do so. And you can do that at kboo.fm. Click on that old donate sign there, icon, and become a member that way. And of course, you can get involved in various other ways, especially by volunteering, if you haven't considered that. And of course, you can volunteer in oh so many ways. Those of you who aren't spending all of your precious time just sustaining yourself and your those around you. There's one way is the Great Panthers, and we're talking to two of the organizers right here. We're talking to Lou Church, the coordinator of the renewed Great Panthers in Portland, and Sally Fronsman Cecil, longtime social justice organizer, recently moved back to Portland from to Oregon from Kansas. You said Topeka. You know, my mom actually lived in Topeka. Mm-hmm. She's from Belleville up in the North Central. But anyway, hi, Mom, if you're listening. And it sounds like we do have our first caller. Who is that again? Go ahead. You're on the air.
It's Karen.
Karen, go ahead.
I just wanted to call because I love your show. And the only reason I didn't call when Jacqueline, the Native American spokesperson, was on was because I was just too immersed in what she was saying. But I wanted to just contribute a little something today. I know a woman, she's named Diva. She's homeless. She lives on Southeast Stark, around 80th, right in that area. She has parked under an overhang.
Yeah, I see her often. Yeah, I live in that neighborhood.
Yeah. And I and a bunch of others have for years been bringing her things. And I've watched her age, and it got to the point that she needed to have some toes amputated. She needed a wheelchair. She needed a place to stay post-surgery, and so on and so on. And all these needs basically were being handled by a wonderful woman who works at a tattoo parlor. I think she owns it. For this surgical stuff, collecting money for it, and this is just brutal and cruel. And of course, it's consistent with the life under metastatic capitalism. So I just wanted to point out that if she's there, if any of your listeners would like to bring her a cold drink during hot weather, or some food, or anything. I always give her money and other stuff, you know, just because she's a human being and probably has some emotional problems.
Well, her and
tried,
hundreds of others,
tried to get her to,
unfortunately.
Yes, exactly. Oh, definitely. I mean, definitely. And there's no judgment there at all on my part. So I just wanted to say that if people could give a hand to Diva, Southeast Stark. She's between 79th and 80th there, and you know, she'll love you for it.
That's great that you called. Thanks for calling.
This topic. Thank you. Bye bye.
Yeah, I go by that pretty often because it's by Bipartisan Cafe. So I've noticed this person as well. That's an excellent suggestion, and it's also helpful, we think, to advocate specifically for voiceless people. That's one of the things we hope to do and have signed up to do next week at City Council on Wednesday morning instead of this program. Paul.
And I think we have another caller. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
A generic question, not really pertaining to anybody particular or whatever, but, you know, I'm 64, and I'm always have my, my philosophy towards the left or whatever, and I came from a small eastern Oregon town, but nationally, I'm going to put this, older people always seems like they vote Republican. They always vote against their interests, like a lot of other people. Well, they will. You know, they call Democrats, borderline communists, any kind of social programs, oh, that's socialism. And so these people, I hate to say these people who are over 65, will always vote redneck, it seems like. They, you know, any kind of the demographics throughout, I don't care if it's Pennsylvania, Florida, especially Arizona, they vote Republican, always against their interests. And I don't know if that's it's going to change or not, but I just don't understand.
Well, maybe my guests have something to offer. This whole thing about voting against one's interests, I'm not sure I agree. Obviously, people people perceive things to be in their interest, so one has to see why that is. But anyway,
Well, for one thing, you might want to look at the demographics. I noticed the state you mentioned, I would imagine that at least some proportion of the elders that vote in those states are not the people who are, in fact, as vulnerable, that they are people who had a certain degree of, if not wealth, at least enough comfortable enough to move to these havens of the elders.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
fine.
The future. You have Paul Ryan, guy from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. You have all these, they want to really decrease Social Security.
Shut down. They're going to shut down.
You have Donald Trump. And these are the people who that voted these people in. I mean, I don't know. Do you see a change because of the baby boomers are getting more aged, that they might be throwback and vote for their own interests instead of against?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things we're attempting to work on in Portland is what we've mentioned before, this intergenerational thing. There's a lot of low-income tenants. We work with, on housing, four HUD buildings where there are low-income tenants, strictly older or elder and disabled tenants. Mm-hmm. And when I ask them, did you vote at all, I'd say 9 out of 10 say no.
Yeah.
So one of the things we emphasize for elections and people voting in their own interests is to be registered, but also to actually to vote. Like the May 15th primary, we got some flack actually for endorsing kind of the alternate candidates. And Joanne Hardesty is the one that we supported that's doing the best. She'll be in a runoff in November for city council. But we also endorsed Maria for county commission, Casey for state senate, and a fourth person, I don't have the name in front of me. But the idea is on intergenerational stuff, people may have just seen last night, in fact, on Channel 8, David Hogg and his sister, they are advocates for Parkland, they're Parkland students, for gun control. And one of the statistics that we found at Portland State in particular is who's registered in terms of younger voters. PSU has a reputation in the past of tilting towards lifelong learners, kind of like a community college, but increasingly there are more and more younger students at PSU. And the stat that we found was that for midterm elections, voters age 18 to 21 turn out at a 15% voting rate, 1-5. So one of the things we want to do is try to make sure, working with Oregon Student Association and other groups, that people who are eligible to vote and maybe just, I think it's partly being cynical about Trump, actually, to address your concerns. People feel like Joe on Tuesday morning talk radio here says, well, we have to impeach him. We have to talk about the children. And that's true certainly with the border and immigration at the moment. It's also true with Parkland and gun control. But part of organizing is actually trying to turn out people for voting, not just in midterms, but in general elections. But I think you have an excellent point about older folks or elders, either voting against their interests, or our experiences, people who are low income and poor feel like there's no point. It's a corrupt system.
Well, I just see the writing on the wall, and I think, within 8 to 10 years, there's going to be a whole lot of hurt. It's a very cruel, cruel culture we have.
Okay.
So, if you don't work, you don't eat.
I think part of the point, in a way, you're making, too, is that we're already there.
Well, it's just, some of these people in their mid-40s, early 50s, they're going to eat it. I'm sorry, but...
we've got a couple other callers, John.
Yeah, okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Mm-hmm.
I just want to make one other point that I think maybe relates to this, is that I think his concern here also goes back to the fact that we're going to have this increasing aging population. Hopefully they're going to be voting if they are the people that that have these needs are going to be voting their interests, in which case they had better be voting. Historically, I believe, without having statistics, elders have tended to vote. There's been a demographic that has tended to vote. However, I wouldn't be surprised to discover that isn't necessarily what you would consider the elders are more in poverty, but maybe I'm wrong. It might be worth looking at the statistics of people in Chicago or something during even Democratic.
I'd also be interested to break it down by various racial and other categories in terms of who the voters are and who gets excluded from voting. But we got another caller. April, go ahead. You're on the air. Wait till our engineer gets back to the board here.
Well, I should mention that I mentioned David Hogg's name. He's one of the organizers with Parkland Students. And one of the things that they've been really excellent at doing, I believe, is targeting Marco Rubio, one of the Republican senators from Florida. Florida is one of the states that has a great deal of senior or elder population. And the last caller, I think John was correct in saying that historically, there's a tendency to vote Republican among that group. But because David has said, we call upon our elders, we call mm-hmm. upon younger voters. Even in this Tribune article I referenced from yesterday for gun control, I started out, and I've already heard from a pro-NRA guy objecting to the whole article. I started out saying, well, part of me has always stayed 14 years old. And why is that? Because it was 1968, and there were assassinations in Vietnam going on, and guns were prevalent then. So do we have a couple other callers, Paul?
Looks like we got April. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. I started talking last time and realized Lou was talking.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So that's okay. I was really excited to hear about this show because I, while I do think voting's important, I don't think that either Democrats or Republicans are going to save us. I think that's us organizing. I also really was excited to hear what Sally had to say. I'm not in her position, but I'm close. I'm 56, and I've lived the same place like, 22 years. And my landlord has tried to illegally evict me, so I stayed here. So they backed off, although they aren't rescinding the eviction. And I have done some calling around, and I am seeing there is nowhere else I can afford. Mm-hmm. I am not a lot older, but I do have several autoimmune diseases also, and I've had to, gradually quit working as much. I'm still working half-time. I'm still struggling to do that much. But there's nowhere I can afford besides the places that are rent-subsidized, and a few of them do cater to people who are 55 and above, and I got on their waiting lists. But they all have 3 to 5 year waiting lists. So, right now, I don't know what the future holds. I'm kind of living day by day. And I do see that there are a lot of people struggling. I mean, I'm luckier than some. At least I have housing right now. But what does the future hold for any of us? I really think the future needs to hold at least getting out in the street and organizing. That seems to be our only hope right now.
Now, this is Sally. I have a question for you. It's a sort of real personal thing. Have you been to eviction court? What is your status with that?
They have not filed, so I stayed here. I did all my research. I got a lawyer. I don't think the landlord knows that yet. We're waiting for them to file.
Okay.
I would be happy to do that. But they have not filed, but they have not rescinded the eviction either.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm asking, I even only found out about eviction court because I don't mm-hmm. have problems with things being socialist because I'm a Democratic Socialist. I happen to know that the people with the Democratic Socialists of America, the Portland chapter here, the housing people are gearing up to do some kind of advocacy support with people in eviction court. That's why I specifically asked that question. I'm aware that there is eviction court here.
Okay. Well, I do know a couple of Democratic Socialists, so maybe I will explore that.
I think at the last DSA meeting, which I think Paul and I went to actually, Sammy seems to be one of the main organizers mm-hmm. for the housing eviction court stuff. People may know Sammy from Portland Tenants United. He's the spouse of Margo Black, a somewhat mm-hmm. controversial organizer, but someone that founded PTU because Margo, and I know Margo really well, that Margo and others felt Community Alliance of Tenants, a long-term nonprofit that does direct service for tenants, basically was not getting in the streets enough at all, and
right,
there needed
right.
to be a more militant, radical response. There's the thing that you mentioned about the wait lists. We have lots of experience dealing with tenants who've been getting evicted when they complain, and also people being on these long wait lists and mm-hmm. trying to figure out a strategy of, well, how can we get in when it seems to just be blocked?
Well, I know my daughter said they had a friend who ended up moving way the heck and gone out some places. He's having problems now because his daughter was living with him, and now that she's gone to college, he's being bumped.
Oh, wow.
But he had gone way out there to get, I believe that was Section 8, because he couldn't get anything locally.
Yeah.
And needed to get into the system.
And the problem is, as long I don't have a car, and as long as I have to keep working, I have to live, you know, somewhere central by transportation. Mm-hmm. So, and I have worked with Community Alliance of Tenants, and I'm aware of Portland Tenants Union and stuff. But the problem is, for years I have asked them, well, what can I do since I rent a single house? I mean, what they do is mainly organize tenants who live in apartment complexes.
Yeah, that's,
and that's not me.
Right. That's an excellent point. One of the things that we've worked on and currently work on is a thing called Tenant Rights Project. In fact, Dorothy, who is hoping to come today, who's 70 and a person in a wheelchair, her big issue is her landlord and threatening tenants if they complain about things. I should mention that Tenant Rights Project organized a rent strike at Portland State a few years ago, and most people would say that's not really a feasible tactic in terms of grassroots activism, but the tenants who did the rent strike stayed out for 6 months. Legal Aid became the attorneys. It's on the front page of the Oregonian. Doing organizing at the grassroots level on housing and tenant rights is one of the, I believe, one of the most effective ways to change the system.
Right. I also tend to think, and maybe that's just because I'm an old-line radical kind of a rabble-rouser type activist,
good
I suppose.
For you.
But I also think at some point, what do you have to lose? I mean, I'm close to that point myself. I am. I mean, if I don't manage to get work, there's no question, but I will probably be forced to do bankruptcy. You know, I prefer to keep not so much my debt, which I'd really like to get rid of, but I would like to keep my credit. I have good credit as long as I actually am able to pay my thing. That doesn't sound like, oh, well, why would you care if you have credit if you're poor and you don't have housing? Oh, I don't know. I might like to have my Goodyear card. So if I have to get my car worked on, which I'm absolutely dependent on if I'm ever going to work, I will be able to do it. That's just one example. So my family's even, well, why don't you just go declare bankruptcy? Well, there are good reasons to keep credit if you have it in this society. And if I don't have it, I will be one step further down. That's the way I look at it, that there are steps and steps and steps. You know?
But there's, there's public transportation if you didn't have a car.
But it won't take me to work.
About your credit.
It won't take me to work. If I don't have a car, I will not work. That was true where I lived before in Topeka, and it is true here. I am currently in my, I don't know if you heard, but my functional housing situation is in Sandy. There is not out there.
So
I would have to at least be able to get to Gresham. I don't know that my family would particularly like me working in some of the homeless shelters and stuff where I might.
I should probably thank you for calling in. It looks like Paul's getting anxious
because
there's
getting
more
other calls.
Okay.
That's right. Here I'm talking to her.
Thank you very much.
thank you for doing that.
Thank you
for calling April, and we hope you are able to resolve your situation, obviously. Let's go to Laura, our next caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Paul. Thank you for having this conversation. Like Sally and April, I am 63, born and raised in Portland, and have been slowly falling out of the system for the past 20 years. It's been a real struggle. And like the others, I wasn't sure, you know, if I was going to be able to stay here in the place that I've lived most of my adult life. Because of the housing issue, and I was on a lot of waiting lists, and luckily I landed in an intergenerational subsidized housing community in North Portland, which is rather amazing. Grateful to be here, almost still pinching myself, but still, like Sally and April, I have to work, and I don't mind working, but it's very difficult to compete, and I don't want to compete. I think there's plenty of work to be done at this point in history. I just can't. It's hard to create those jobs, and that's one of the things I'm interested in. But the point I want to make is that I'm an activist. This is I want my third age, however long that's going to be. I want to be giving forward. I don't really want to be spending what I, in some ways, think, you know, the halcyon years of my life on scrabbling for survival, but that's a good portion of where my energy is spent. But as an activist, I work in my neighborhood on the Willamette River Superfund cleanup. I'm also a Hanford activist. These are things very near and dear to my heart. And what I find is that elders in my community, I'm watching friends having to leave and people being displaced. They are, you know, part of the land. Some of them have lived here for their entire lives, 60, 70 years. And as they're being pushed out, the story of place, we're losing the story of place. And that's a travesty in terms of things like the Willamette River cleanup. I mean, mm-hmm. you need the story of place. You need people who know where the wastes are buried, what's been done, what's not been done. And I've experienced that people, elders know things about place that we need to learn from them. And I know mm-hmm. the Native American communities have suffered this tragedy, and in large part, you know, they're part of what's holding the land together in many places. So I think it's really important to know that losing the elderly population from a community is just a travesty in terms of keeping place together, understanding place, and cleaning up, you know, some of the legacy waste that we have. And I'm struggling to do that. And like Bill McKibben, I think, said, I believe that I am at an age where I want to be on the front line and should be on the front mm-hmm. line, and I want to give forward. And I think many elders do, but we're really struggling to just survive. So I just wanted to make that point about place and elder stewardship. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a wonderful point. Hard to add anything to that. Let's just go to our next caller then. Lynn, you're probably going to be our last caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Good morning. Hey, I wasn't going to bring this up until the last conversation. I couldn't tell which person it was saying about how they need to get a job.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about what I'm a little disappointed, I didn't hear in the earlier conversations, I didn't hear you mention anything about age discrimination in hiring, and I'm wondering if y'all are going to take aim at that in any way.
Well, of course, I haven't been here that long, so I haven't exactly. It's sort of a more general feel than anything specific, like somebody didn't hire you. But also the sense of like the skills you've got. Like I have human services skills. A lot of my skills were things I was able to use when I was younger. I've done attendant care. I've done mental health attendant care. I have done home health kinds of work, those kinds of things in the past. And actually some of the kinds of things I could do now with working in shelters and stuff, I meet every requirement except that I can no longer lift things. You know, I'm not as mobile as I used to be.
So it's kind of a dual thing. I'm sure there are people who probably could talk about age discrimination, but it's a dual thing. It's, you know, maybe the things you're not able to do, some of the things you could want. So that is a form of discrimination.
And it
as
also
well.
Blocks things that you still can do.
Right.
My body is, I'm trying to do some PT. I'm hoping my physical therapy will help me get me more, but I'm not ever going to be as mobile as I was 10 or 20 years ago.
Well, we got to wrap up here in a couple of minutes. I thank you for calling in, Lynn. Maybe there'll be a topic. I think Lou's might be substituting for me on a couple shows. I'm going to be taking a month break from mid-July to mid-August. And anyway, thank you for calling, Lynn. So maybe that's a subject that can be tackled later on. We got to wrap up here in a minute. So you're going to encourage people to participate in Great Panthers. Once again, talk about how to get involved.
Sure. 503-222-2974. There's a voicemail if you want to leave a note. We're also on Facebook. It's Portland Great Panthers 2018. Should get you to the current group. For the last caller's point, I think, Lynn, age discrimination is really an important issue. And one of the groups we helped work on was called Workers' Rights Action Project. And so in terms of jobs, there's several stories that I could tell, but we're at the end of the show. But age discrimination is definitely something we want to work on. And what we need as a volunteer organization is people to be able to come and share their stories and ideas for organizing on that specific issue. Paul?
So I'll just repeat, Saturday, 4 p.m. at the Chit Chat Cafe, 1907 Southwest 6th, right at the PSU campus. And thank you, Lou.
Sure. Thanks, Sally.
And Sally.
Thank you.
For being here. And thank you for listening. And stay tuned for more programming here on KBOO Radio. One.
One nation, one cause, one people, one tribe. Now it's us against the pipeline. Get on your feet for Standing Rock, and we'll show you how strong we could be when we unify.
KBOO hosts beloved community and action movie nights every third Thursday at 7 p.m. here at the radio station. June 21st, we'll show the documentary film Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock. Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock captures the story of Native-led defiance that changed the fight for clean water, the environment, and the future of our planet. Again, that's a screening of Awake for the KBOO Beloved Community in Action Movie Night on Thursday, June 21st at 7 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Planet's been in decline since 1492, 500 years and counting. Surviving the genocide they call colonizing my turtle island. What is
the all I know? I keep making this fooler. I stay protected. That blue steel it do ya. Yeah, my chick bad and I keep the Kill Bill. Yeah, born and raised thoroughbred trio. Let's go, let's go. All
I know. Hey, this is Randy West coming from OSP at our annual Yehusasa Talent Show.
Yeah, let me be clear about it. I got it, I got it. You way out of pocket. Don't bring this shit here. Getting body back, tipping the bottle back. This is
yeah, this your boy TJ down in OSP, man. I'm telling you, rap music, you know what I'm saying, R&B. You know what I'm saying, got a little bit of comedy up in there, man.
Y'all make sure y'all tune in June 25th at 6:30 p.m. Check out some of these guys from the OSP prison doing their thing, you know. We got a lot of acts and a lot of talent in here to share with the world, so just make sure y'all check that out. June 25th, 6:30 p.m. Prison Pipeline, y'all.
Tell me, baby, are we gonna let the elevator bring
It's 9 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland, and here's what we've got coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, it's Making Contact, today examining the criminalization of black girls, their intricate lives being highly judged by teachers, administrators, and the so-called justice system. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, and then at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, as usual. And at 11, the Food Show reports on the threats posed by Big Dairy in Oregon. And we thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support, and we urge listeners to KBOO who are not yet members to get involved. Stay informed. You know you do it here. And it would be really helpful if you went to kboo.fm and click on Donate and become one of those members. Thank you. Now here's Making Contact.
This week on Making Contact.